District of Conservation is sponsored by the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, better known as CFECT. To learn more about our sponsor, head over to CFECT.org. Thanks for listening to the program.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to District of Conservation. I am your host, Gabriella Hoffman. This podcast offers a sober examination into all things hunting, fishing, shooting sports, energy, environment, and the public policy surrounding it. And this podcast also specializes in original interviews that you won't hear elsewhere. Here's what I have for you today. We're keeping up with the Western theme this week with an update on Bears Ears National Monument. Many episodes ago, I was focusing on this, and I've been to Bears Ears National Monument. I focus very closely on Antiquities Act. I follow this issue closely for my work at both IWF and CFECT because I'm very concerned about the president not following Section 2 of the Antiquities Act, which says you can only protect objects of important scientific, historical, cultural significance on the smallest area compatible. That is not millions of acres. I've included in the show notes, as you're listening and you're like, where do I go to learn more about this complex topic? Everything is in the show notes, a primer on the Antiquities Act, Bears Ears, what have you. But I've brought on one of my favorite guests who knows about Bears Ears. He's from Utah, Andrew Sandstrom, who is a conservative conservationist activist. And we're talking today about the proposed Bears Ears co-management plan. So the Biden administration, in conjunction with the Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service, which both manage areas of Bears Ears National Monument, there are six proposed alternatives or preferred alternatives. The Biden administration is most preferential to one called Alternative E, which would lean heavily on what is known as indigenous knowledge. And Andrew and I are going to talk about what this Alternative E constitutes, what the restrictions to certain activities are, why there has to be greater reform on the Antiquities Act, and if we're going to see congressional action or just this volleying back and forth between the courts, Congress, and the White House, especially on the heels of a presidential election. This is not going to be a major story, but for people in Utah, this may be a driver of who gets elected to state and even federal office. Let's jump right into this update. And again, if you need resources, check out the show notes. Everything is included there about all these plans, Bears Ears, Context, Antiquities Act, and much more. Thanks for listening. We're really thrilled to welcome back Andrew Sandstrom to the podcast to talk about the latest with Bears Ears National Monument. Andrew, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be back, Gabby. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for drawing this to my attention because I remember this was kind of looming in the background. I'd heard about the co-sharing management between different Native American tribes and the National Park Service and BLM and BLM and Forest Service are overseeing, BLM and Forest Service, not National Park Service. But to me, it seems like they do want this eventually to be prepped to be a national park under the purview of the National Park Service. That's what I feel like this is being teed up to be. But Andrew, you had shared with me some of the details of the finalized plan. I think now there's a comment section for the next 90 or so days, correct? So briefly inform listeners, what is this final plan? How many versions there are? And then we'll go into some of the restrictions that will come with this if their preferred alternative is accepted and finalized.
So many of your listeners might know this already, but when there's a designation like this, you know, there will be a land management plan or LMP that will take a long time to produce, right? This is coming years after the monument was redesignated, right? This is now the third land management plan they've worked on. It's gone back and forth between Obama, Trump, now back to Biden. And what they'll do is they'll release a couple of alternatives and they'll say, okay, we could do it this way, A, B, C. And what I've seen, especially for instance, with the last plan that came out on Bears Ears after the Trump production, I think they had three alternatives. And, you know, alternative A will say, we're not changing anything. They'll always have a no action alternative, and then they'll have, you know, progressively restrictive alternatives, and then they'll say which one's their preferred one, right? So I believe last time it was A, B, C, C was the most restrictive, A didn't change anything, and then they said, we want B, or something like that will happen. In this case, they gave five, they went A, B, C, D, E. E is the most restrictive, and then they said E is what's preferred. And then along with that, there were some tribal actors who came out sort of prepped to promote alternative E. So it's not only, hey, here's some alternatives, and we like the most restrictive ones. It's, here's some alternatives, we like the most restrictive one. By the way, the most restrictive one is the only one anyone should support, and here's all of these indigenous voices to tell you why you have to support alternative E.
And let's go into alternative E. What does it look like? Because through combing some of the details, I've seen that there are restrictions to recreational shooting. Not surprising. There are some limits to grazing, and then across 170,000 acres. And then I think there's about half of the tract, the 1.3 million acres, I think a little over half of that is going to be off limits to OHVs. So is that correct? What restrictions can public recreationists who want to go to Bears Ears expect if, let's say, this preferred alternative E is implemented?
So first of all, you know, I should, full disclosure, this is a 678-page plan. So there's a lot of things that I haven't found in here yet, right? We're all digesting this. And I was a little bit encouraged that in any newspaper article you read, all of the expert sources will always say, well, I'm still digesting it, but, and then they'll say what they know from what they've digested so far. And so from what we know, having just sort of gotten this plan, there are some things that they're going to allow, but you know, the restrictions you mentioned, there's going to be a large amount of area that's going to be designated as remote. And that can be pretty jarring to anyone who's recreated in the area before, who's done things like OHV or recreational shooting. Limits recreational shooting. Something that was interesting to me is in all of the alternatives, hunting is allowed, but in alternative E, it restricts hunting. It restricts what it calls trophy hunting in some areas, which anybody who's listening who knows anything about hunting knows that trophy hunting is not anything hunters ever identify as or talk about, right? It's kind of a made-up kill word in some ways. So I'm still trying to figure out what they mean by that. Is it that you have to be subsistence hunting? You know, do you have to be feeding yourself with it? I don't know how they're going to determine that. There's a large area that will be called remote that they won't be allowing any kind of motorized traffic in. And then like wilderness areas will be restricted to parties of, I think it's usually 20, sometimes it's 12. They're going to have restrictions like that where you're going to have a limited party size. You're not going to be able to be on any kind of, you know, vehicle with wheels, right? There's going to be areas that are essentially going to be, you know, managed like wilderness, more so in alternative E. And then you mentioned that alternative E, unlike the others, would restrict in most areas having, except in designated areas, there would be no sport shooting, which is sort of interesting and to me kind of seems unnecessary, right? I've been down there and have not seen a lot of destruction to the land from sport shooting. The most destruction I've seen is from increased tourism, and tourists don't usually bring their guns. They usually go and see the indigenous sites and are usually extreme, you know, not, you know, the problems come from tourists, you know, touching the sites or being disrespectful. They don't come from locals going out and shooting. So I don't know exactly what the rationale is behind the sport shooting. But definitely sort of this attitude of, you know, we've had these management plans in place, and, you know, your listeners probably already know this, but these aren't lands that weren't public and are now public. The Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, they've worked with the state, they've worked with the Division of Forestry, Fires and Lands, and with the Department of Wildlife Resources and others to manage these lands for a long time, right? So they've had restrictions in place to protect sites, and they've had restrictions in place to protect wildlife and vegetation and trail management. And this is just sort of taking all of that over and getting rid of a lot of this, getting rid of what the state's been doing and saying, actually, we're going to put more restrictive management in, you know, in a lot more of this area. So I know that the state has been really unhappy with that because they've obviously worked really hard to take care of this area for a long time. And they feel sort of like they've been left out in the process. The gist of it is alternative E looks a lot more like the, you know, original plans of the Obama administration to sort of, you know, lock this up from anything besides, you know, hiking and backpacking.
And alternative E also specifies that it's going to be leaning heavily on indigenous knowledge. And we were talking, Andrew, before going online, that indigenous knowledge has been floated in different agencies all across the Biden administration. I've seen it in the EPA. It's starting to creep in other facets or in other departments, rather, DOE, DOI, all over the place. And I've criticized it not because I'm reflexively responding to it as a conservative, whatever, not because of that. But to me, it seems like indigenous knowledge would be selectively applied. So you could have indigenous knowledge that favors net zero, no multiple uses, very selective uses and access points for public lands, especially under national monument designations, versus, you know, let's say there are Native Americans, maybe the Ute tribe or some others who may not be in full agreement with this co-sharing. And I'm being hypothetical. I don't recall if the Ute tribe is part of this co-sharing management, but there may be some other tribes who've been excluded from co-management responsibilities.
They are a part of it in this case.
So yes, they are. So yes, I don't want to put any misinformation out there, but let's say maybe they are, let's say, disagreeing with a certain component. Would they be heard there? Or maybe there was another tribe, let's say outside of the confines of this, not the Ute tribe, of course, but another tribe who wasn't included. And they say, well, if you ban OHV, if you ban recreational shooting, or if you ban trophy hunting, this goes against our beliefs as Native Americans, because you could twist indigenous knowledge, since it's not scientific, to mean anything you want it to mean. And so the Biden administration, unfortunately, has exploited the plight of Native Americans to align with their interests, of course. And where we can see indigenous knowledge falter really is when they don't listen to all perspectives. I'm not sure what's going to happen here, but they'll certainly say that indigenous knowledge for preferred alternative E necessitates restricting all these different uses. That's what my understanding of reading into the plan is. Do Utahns have any contention with that, or any concerns about indigenous knowledge applying here because of just the subjective, selective nature of how it can be applied?
I think that I'm in support of having more tribal, I'm in support of having more tribal representation in the management of these lands. I think that I sort of share I share to a certain degree the goal of, you know, the Biden and Obama administrations in terms of wanting to have tribes have a seat at the table. And traditional indigenous knowledge, you know, there's sometimes can be a really beneficial thing. For instance, there are tribes in California that were doing controlled burns long before Western settlers. And so there's something I think there, and I think that's good. You know, that's I'm happy to look at that sort of thing. I haven't heard much about it from other Utahns. I think the main concern is less that this plan incorporates tribal indigenous knowledge, and more that it feels like we're now saying, hey, we want the tribes to have a seat at the table, but we don't want the state and the county to have a seat at the table the way they have in the past. And I think that is what the big mistake is with Bears Ears National Monument, is it's looking at a situation where tribes maybe should have had more of a say in the way this land was managed. I think they should have had more of a say. And I think there could be ways of incorporating a shared management of land with tribes more frequently. But you bring up the subjectivity of the way this plan's written. Yeah, it needs to be more than just sort of buzzwords to let people know that you care about indigenous people. It needs to be meaningful legislation that actually can't be done in a land management plan like this, where you sort of create land management policies that include stakeholders more than they do now and have tribes be included in that. And the subjectivity, I think honestly, Gabriella, what will happen is just, this will sort of be like a nod. I think this is just all sort of meant as a nod to indigenous peoples. And I think that in practice, what's going to happen is you're going to have this managed according to the interests of the environmental groups that lobbied it. And that's not, you know, I love nominally, you know, bringing tribes to the table, and I love bringing tribes to the table. But maybe what we should be looking for is, instead of using the executive branch to take over an area and take away, you know, the input of state and county governments, maybe we should instead change the way that we look at land management so that it's more collaborative, right? But that's not what the Biden administration's done here.
I do agree with you that we should seek the input of Native Americans. I wasn't not saying that. But I was saying that I feel like they're going to use them. And then whenever they're no longer politically expedient, they're going to just disregard their opinion. I feel like
yes. Here's the problem is the Antiquities Act gives a lot of power to the president, but it doesn't give the power necessary for the president to create a permanent and binding relationship with the tribes to manage shared land. So they can create a land management plan that incorporates tribal input, but they can't protect that from future administrations changing it. So you're absolutely right that right now there is a strong alliance between some tribal interests and environmental interests. And like you mentioned with the Ute tribe has gotten burned by environmental interests in terms of, you know, a national monument here in Colorado where I'm calling in from right now, where they weren't, they didn't get their input on ancestral land. Well, why not? Well, because they're not in the environmental club that lobbied that monument to exist. So I think you are absolutely right that this is not as substantive as it needs to be. And I think it has to do less with being specific about what traditional indigenous knowledge is and being more specific about and more permanent about the who will be at the table and when, and how can we know that these stakeholders are going to have a say in management in this area, you know, not just under this LMP, but in general, right? And I think that should happen for the tribes. I also think it should happen for the county and state governments. And if we can get, you know, if we can get Republicans to, and others, and, you know, maybe some pragmatic Democrats to think about a way to make a compromise, not on bear's ears specifically, but just in land management in general, to create some more collaboration to limit the Antiquities Act, then that would be better for indigenous peoples in the long run all over the United States than this sort of very, very significant gesture, but also because of the legal limitations to what the president can do, just a gesture to say, hey, we care about tribal indigenous knowledge.
I wholeheartedly agree. And that's why there have been reforms introduced every year to amend and modernize the Antiquities Act. And there's actually a couple efforts, I think, underway. I don't think they're sadly going to gain any traction. But what I am paying attention to is a couple pending court cases that may go to the Supreme Court to challenge presidential authority, or clarify, rather, what presidential authority under Section 2 of the laws, if it's, you know, smallest area compatible, is that 1.3 million acres or is it 100,000 acres? We still have that question looming and you know, out there over, you know, how much a president can designate and if it's truly antiquities that he's protecting. Because as I recall, and as I mentioned to you before, when I was visiting with Commissioner Bruce Adams, or I don't know if he's still in office and left, because maybe since the time we last talked about this, he may have retired, because I know he was saying that he was going to be out of office at some point soon. Maybe someone took over for him. I think recently, last year election.
He didn't run for re-election, so.
So he's probably been out since the end of
January.
January, yes. Okay, so yes, he's probably out now. But when he gave us a tour of Bear's Ears, he had explained to us, I thought very cogently and clearly, that they're including a lot of things that aren't antiquities, whether it's scientific, historical, or cultural. And so that is what is supposed to be protected, like the artifacts we saw at one of the overlooks. Some of the native artifacts, I can't recall off the top of my head where we visited again, but it'll come back to me at some point. One of the popular trails.
On the tip of my tongue as well. I know where you're talking about.
Yeah. So one of the most popular, accessible, unperturbed places that the public can access at Bear's Ears, very easy hike from the parking lot to the overlook where you would see these Native American ruins and artifacts. That deserves protection. And I think Commissioner Adams had said that I'm okay with a modified, you know, Bear's Ears plan of maybe 200, 300,000 acres, including these specific areas. But he explained to us, I thought really well, that a lot of the coverage of Bear's Ears was what, mesquite cactus, which is not endangered by any means or threatened. So it included plants and species and animals and landscapes that were not technically or not under the definition of what antiquities are. It was just a way for them to just make it off limits under the guise of saying this is sacred Native American land. and there shouldn't be the activities, which is why their preferred alternative, Plan E, hopes to accomplish, in my understanding. And that's why I think we're going to see, once this, if this were to be finalized, rather, we're going to probably see the debate over the Antiquities Act and how much power a president has re-emerging, I think, in the discourse again, going into a presidential year. That's what we can anticipate. But this is an issue, Andrew, like we've discussed many times, that Congress has to fix and resolve at some point, because they keep kicking down this issue down the road, and it's not fair to anyone. And like you had mentioned, Utah feels extremely slighted because they've not been properly consulted. They've gone to outside groups who kind of creep into bear's ears in that southeastern Utah portion and say, we know the will of the people. And then, of course, they find a few tribal members that are very in alignment with their agenda and say, we are representing their interests, da, da, da. And then you hear from many Utah stakeholders that they were not properly consulted. This is common across any area that has been designated under Biden, Obama, Clinton. And what happens is they bypass the kind of stakeholder input, and it's not very democratic. You're just having these groups petition Biden. And that's what they did when he came to office, which is why he restored it to the Obama era enlargement and then some, even more, without proper consultation. Because now these environmental groups, since they're buddies with the administration, they can say, we're petitioning you directly. We know you're going to agree with us, or else we're not going to support you in reelection, or we're going to cause you trouble. That's usually how these kind of negotiations go behind the scenes, from my understanding. And so to not anger these climate activists, Biden's like, okay, we'll agree. And then the public finds out these plans later on. And this is what's caused a lot of the friction out west over this, which leads people to believe, well, if you oppose this, it means you hate public lands. No, I'm a public lands defender. I just think there should be some clarity over how much a president can designate. And we have to keep as many multiple uses as possible where appropriate under these designations, because these are still BLM and Forest Service lands. They're not National Park Service.
And I want to add, with the state, the state being slighted, is that is inherent in the process, right? There might be some great folks. Actually, I've met folks at the BLM that are great, that want to be collaborative. But you have, when you have executive control over something, you're tying that to the reelection of the president of the United States. And you're tying that to the partisan politics of the Republican and Democratic parties and who's on their side when they elect presidents. And so because of that, right, and the pendulum could just swing the other direction. And we see this all the time in public lands politics, is because so much of this is dependent on executive authority. If you're buddy-buddy with the administration that's making these decisions, you're going to get a seat at the table. And, you know, no matter what the opinion is of the folks at the BLM, if the Biden administration wants to see the Bears Ears National Monument be preservationist, and that's what it is, right? The state's been doing a lot of conservation, but they want to make this preservation, right? Like the cactuses. Mm-hmm. And that's going to affect grazing. They're saying they're allowing grazing, but this happened with Escalante before. They kept the grazing permits, but because of the land management, in part because of land management, in part because of drought, those grazing permits ended up not mattering because the land wasn't sustainable for cattle. I think you're going to see that sort of thing happen, where we're managing the land for the cactus and not managing the land for the cattle. Cattle aren't going to be able to stay there no matter who has a permit, if something, you know, if it's not healthy enough for the forage. If you don't have a seat at the table with the president, you don't get that level of input. And that's how the state feels right now. And the state's been trying to do a balanced land management down there and treat this like shared land. They haven't done a perfect job. But when you have the federal government come in, when you have specifically when you have the executive branch come in, inherent in that process is a larger seat at the table for the interests that are close to the president. And so you're absolutely right. We're seeing, you know, a lot of preservationism brought into this area that is, you know, being done as a nod to indigenous people. And they are now, as this has progressed, they've included indigenous people more, not just including them in name. And I'll give them credit for that. But leaving out of the table a lot of other stakeholders. And yeah, the state is, you know, the state's suing, and they've actually refused to do a land swap with the state trust lands, which is a big deal. That basically means that they're anticipating, or rather hoping, that the Supreme Court overturns this.
Yeah, the Supreme Court, I think, is going to weigh in on the issue. Maybe, I don't think this cycle, this term session, I think actually they may deliberate it early in the fall, and then maybe next SCOTUS session, they're going to take up a case. And I think there's even like a third or fourth case maybe relating to Antiquities Act. I know it's from Oregon and some others as well. It relates to a forestry case off the top of my head. I can't recall who the plaintiffs are, but we follow each other on social media and I know it right off the tip of my tongue again who it is, but it relates to the more of the Pacific Northwest. But yes, challenges are going to come. And depending upon where things go electorally, we may have, hopefully, you know, if it were to go, but let's say back to a Trump administration and a full Republican Congress, Senate and House, we could see some reforms that way. But if it's going to be divided like this right now, I don't anticipate anything happening except judicially and maybe through court challenges happening there. But Andrew, as we round out the conversation, where would you like people to go to learn more about the issue and follow you, since you like to chime in on these issues and you follow Bears Ears very closely?
So, you know, folks can always follow me on Twitter, Andrew Sandstrom. My handle is A Sandstrom 451. Sandstrom's like Sandstorm. You just switch the R and the O, but A Sandstrom 451. You can follow me on Twitter. And I would, you know, encourage people to follow news as it comes out from the Deseret News and other local papers. Salt Lake Tribune will have a more environmentalist perspective. They do sometimes have, you know, within that sort of bias, though, they'll also do some good interviews or quotes. I recommend getting that because, honestly, the national media messes this up so often that
they do.
I would go to the local sources.
Yeah, I think the local sources understand this. And I think actually the only exception maybe would be E&E News. They're a little more fair in the coverage and they understand kind of the nuances associated with this. But it's always good, Andrew, to have you on the program. I love talking about this, even though there's so many different things occupying the news cycle. We have the EV mandate dropping tomorrow after we talk, and there's just so much going on. The LNG news, apparently they're going to be lifting the restrictions within a year because it was political, just to make their Green New Deal backers happy. So we will keep this in the news cycle or try to get this into the news cycle too. I always appreciate you coming on to talk about this with me.
It's great to be here. And I just want to mention again, I'm a fan of shared land. We just all need to collaborate and create institutions that let us do that.
Absolutely. Well said. Thanks for listening to District of Conservation. If you enjoyed what you heard today, go leave us some reviews on Apple and Spotify or wherever podcasts are played. Your feedback will help us reach more people, and I love to know what is on your mind after each episode. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to never miss a beat or a guest announcement, because that is our way of updating all of you listeners. And we have just hit 1,000 followers on Instagram for the podcast account. Thank you very much. And if you have any guest suggestions or topics you want to hear on the show, I'm all ears. I would love to hear your feedback there. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.